Brian Had a Dream, 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we come back after another real-world hiatus. Jobs just sometimes get in the way. But we have a brand new news story to take a look at. Could Marvel and Fox start doing some business together in a shared universe, a la what Marvel and Sony did with Spider-Man? We take a look at that story. We hear about the latest movies Brian has seen, and we also do a top five of what if Wolverine was in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, who would play him? Brian's top five picks for that little question. But before we get to all that, first we want to say thank you to all of you for downloading, listening, and following along in this conversation with Brian. And of course, Brian, the first thing we want to ask you is, where are you after this long time we've been away on your quest for 10,000?
8,442.
It just keeps getting closer and closer. It feels more and more real. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I think by the beginning of 2018, I will be somewhere somewhere close to 8,600, maybe close to 8,700. So I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, so at that point, you'll have about 21 months still to get about 1,200 movies watched.
Yeah, and I think that's gonna. I don't think it's going to be a problem now. It was a period of time where I wasn't sure, but I feel pretty confident.
Do you worry about, as you get closer to, in some ways, like running out of enough movies to watch that you can find, that you'll make it?
No. I still have, there are roughly 500 Looney Tunes I have not seen. So I know that, you know, and I'm watching some of those, well, a lot of those, but, no, I know there are easily 1,600 movies, plus there are new movies coming out, so I don't worry about finding something that I haven't seen to watch.
Now, will you at any point, do you think, if you're getting close, will you change some of your criteria for what counts as a movie or not in order to ensure you hit the 10,000 mark at a certain point?
No, I won't need to do that. If anything, I might make it stricter as I get closer and know that I'm, you know, winding down, I may say, no, let's don't count that, or something like that. I might do that, or I might cull the list and throw some things out.
And are you starting to maybe kind of think and anticipate what your 10,000th movie will be?
Most definitely.
Do you care to share what's on the short list, or do you want to kind of keep that under your hat for a little while?
Got some ideas. You know, I'm right now I'm thinking, what do I want 9,000 to be? You know, do I want that to be a special, or I want to say something and try to, like, you know, maneuver things around schedule-wise to where that comes in.
Because of that, let's not say that yet. Let's get a little bit closer, but maybe tell me just this, and our listeners this. Do you think on those, like, special occasions, would you want to make sure those are in a theater, or would you watch those, ooh, you know, with friends on a TV screen, or just, you know, on your computer?
I haven't really thought about it, but that's a good thing to think about.
All right. Well, we will continue to monitor that as we go along. Of course, we need to ask what the last movie you saw was. The right answer is Thor Ragnarok, but
well,
I think we're recording this before you've seen that.
I did not get to go see Thor. I went to visit with my family this weekend instead. The very last movie, the movie I watched earlier this afternoon, was a 1968 Cuban film called Lucia, and it was in the most recent edition of the book of 1,001 Movies to Watch Before You Die. So it was, that's why I watched it, and it was good. Over the weekend, though, while I was visiting family, one of the services that I subscribe to or utilize, Filmstruck, is the name of the service. It's the Criterion Collection and TCM have partnered together to create a repository for hard to find and interesting films. They put a collection of Jim Henson's early work, early animation and early shorts out, and it blazed through several of those this weekend, and that was fascinating stuff.
It sounds like you enjoyed all those films you saw. They still were not better than Thor Ragnarok. That's the last movie I saw. It was awesome. Go out and see it as soon as
where,
you can.
Where is it? Now, well, since
go
we're
and
talking,
see it the
where,
third or fourth time if you need to. It's amazing.
Where would you put – I know you briefly said this right after you saw it. You gave me some initial thoughts. But where do you put it in the pantheon, in the MCU 20 – roughly 19, 20 films.
For me, just because I think the degree of difficulty was so high, the pressure was so on, for me, Avengers is always going to be number one. It's the only one of those movies I went like at a midnight showing just because
it's
going to
be
really
difficult.
Pull this off.
I agree. It's going to be difficult for any movie they put out.
And that's beyond just the technical or storytelling plots, you know, acting performance. It's just this actually happened. It was pretty good, that sort of thing. There's sort of a nostalgia, kind of just a feel-good aspect of it that is just, I think, always going to make that one number one for me. I would put Thor Ragnarok in the conversation for two and no lower than three. For a lot of people, particularly my wife, she likes Guardians of the Galaxy better than any of them. She puts Guardians of the Galaxy one.
No, I can't.
And I think most people would have Guardians of the Galaxy at two or three themselves. For me, probably whichever one I watched most recently would get the number two spot, which is why I probably have Thor Ragnarok there right now. I don't know how it all works and why it all works the way it does, but it just does. It takes elements from the first two Thor films. And kind of improvises with them, embellishes on them. It takes elements from some of those shorts that Marvel's added to their DVD Blu-ray releases, particularly the one, I don't know if you've seen this, there was one that was done, I think, on the Civil War release, which had like Thor and Banner in it, Mark Ruffalo and Chris Hemsworth were in it, and Thor had a roommate in Australia, and the humor, it was all through that short. That's basically the tone of a lot of Thor in this. And so it takes just kind of all these diverse elements. There's a lot of cool callbacks and Easter eggs. It's just really well done. When the biggest issue maybe in the movie is it doesn't have Jamie Alexander, who plays Sif, somewhere in the movie, I was like, oh, where is she? That's weird. And that was it. I think you made a pretty good
movie. You didn't miss Natalie Portman.
I didn't miss Natalie Portman at all. And they even addressed that, because they even addressed that, very briefly, very, very briefly, and in a very funny way. But Sif wasn't mentioned at all. So if I had to think about it, that would be my one nit to pick with that movie. But it was fantastic. So... for the first time maybe ever, I've seen a movie that is not only one Brian hasn't seen, but better than a lot of the movies Brian has seen. So
I'll mark
that in the win column, and we'll go see it together. Maybe both for the second time. Now, though, we move into our conversation about a news story Brian shared with me a little bit earlier in the week. About discussions that apparently Disney and Fox have been having about Disney acquiring maybe certain properties from Fox film and TV domains.
Okay.
So, Brian, tell us a little bit about this article you found, where you found it, and kind of what it said.
Well, I just, just popped up on my Twitter feed, but it appears that
And Mickey. That Twitter feed also, that's a good segue just to join in this conversation.
At
10K Movies, or Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Go ahead.
Yeah, on my Twitter. And, the idea is that Fox, and I'm not sure if it was the Disney company, like making an overture to purchase some properties from Fox, or Fox looking to unload some excess baggage. You know, you could read it either way, but the gist of it was that Fox is looking to streamline and Disney is looking to gobble up any and everything it can. The interesting thing about it, you know, everybody immediately, like the first thing that I saw from pretty much everyone was, does this mean the X-Men and the Avengers will interact? I mean, that was everybody's first, like, gut.
Which was interesting because in the story, because you passed it on to me too, and I read it, and the story, the only real specifics that it made about anything were the Fox television properties. Talking about FX and National Geographic were kind of part of the deal that Disney would probably take on those. And that Fox Sports in particular and Fox News were not early on the negotiating table. Fox Sports, because there'd be, whether or not it actually would be, there's at least, there'd be concern enough to dissuade a buying of that. Due to antitrust issues. If you had ESPN and Fox Sports combined, that would be an issue.
The Fox network outright, because you can't own two major networks. They own ABC and Fox.
Right. And so that creates questions about, you know, what other properties maybe own those networks.
It does.
Do you get any other distribution rights?
I watch my fair number of FX shows, and none of those seem very Disney to me. I mean, every one of them seems like something Disney would have scrapped and passed on and never have seen the light of day under the Disney umbrella. So you just wonder, like, how is this going to work? Are you going to continue with these series? Are you going to continue this tone? Is this going to be – because, you know, there was a period of time briefly in the late 80s, early 90s when Disney tried to, like, diversify, and they had Touchstone Pictures, and then they had – I think they were involved in, you know, it's a taboo word now, but they were involved with Miramax for a while. And they were trying to, like, get some edgier fare out without diluting the brand of Disney, but also being involved in that as well. And then you ask yourself, okay, if they bought the properties, the Marvel property, are you going to make an R-rated Deadpool with a Disney logo printed on it? Because it just doesn't feel like they're going to let that happen. So the ground just shifts under a lot of this stuff, and you're just up in the air. You don't know where to go with it.
Well, it's interesting, too, to me, the other thing, why did this story break now? Because one of the things that story you shared said a couple of times is that, you know, there's no ongoing talk right now. This stuff has happened. It could be picked up. So the question is how and who leaked it, and in whose best interest was it to leak this? Was it Disney? Was it Fox? You know, the gist of the story is that it feels like it was maybe Fox's side or someone on that side that brought this to light.
Well, and you get the feeling that maybe Fox was like, maybe Disney, the talks with Disney had cooled, but you show Disney was interested to maybe get some interest from other possible suitors. To think, oh, if they wanted it, maybe I want it. Maybe I'll that's up for sale. Maybe I'll come in and try to swoop in and purchase what I can out of it. Yeah. So I think that's, you know, part of what's going on.
Well, it does interesting, you know, one of the things that you said to me also is, you know, you get a Fantastic Four movie, maybe in Marvel Phase 4. I think, again, need to stress, the story says nothing's imminent. It remains to be seen if any conversations like those pick back up again. It's also exciting to think about. We'll talk about, obviously, the X-Men connection in a little bit.
Part of that excitement comes from the fact that the main characters, we know that the main characters in Marvel Cinematic Universe are winding down their usefulness, you know, in the sense that Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you want to leave before we want you to leave, you know, and you want to bow out kind of like at that high note that the last episode of MASH managed to go out on, rather than, you know, the last episode of some other show that ran on, you know, two seasons too long and nobody's watching. So, you know, and then there's all sorts of speculation that one of the major characters, and nobody knows this for sure, but one of the major characters will bite the dust in Infinity Wars, which is coming up in this spring. And Marvel, which, you know, they had listed all their movies out for like 5 or 6 years at a time. They've been real cagey about what movies to expect post-Infinity War. I mean, they have Guardians 3 and the Spider-Man sequel, and that's really the only two that are on the books for after this two-part Avengers, you know, trilogy or quatrain finishes. It feels like a natural time to inject some new life with some new characters and go off in different. It just feels right. I feel like this is the right time.
It does. I think one of the reasons that Kevin Feige and Marvel have said they don't have very much is because they think if they reveal that, it would spoil what's coming in Infinity War and the sequel.
So they know. Somewhere they have a calendar that has those films and has those dates, but they haven't put it out to the public.
And so maybe that's why that story maybe dropped too. Maybe it's, you know, things are becoming a little bit looser now that we're getting closer to a time when that stuff can be revealed. And so maybe there's some breadcrumbs being dropped along the way. Let's put the Marvel stuff, though, just to the side. We're going to come back to it, obviously, when we talk about the top five. But with a little bit more time we have on this topic, tell me, though, you know, what are the other things you think for Disney would be priorities for?
I did not think about it at first. Somebody pointed it out to me not long afterwards. And, you know, I'm insanely curious. I know that Fox would keep the Fox networks, but I don't know if Fox would keep, like, licensing deals for the programs on their networks or not, like how that would work and how much intellectual property they would give up. And so then, for me, a big concern right off the bat is if Disney owns my favorite nuclear family, Homer, Marge, Bart, Lisa, and Maggie, like how that – what would happen? You know, would they Disney-fy would you see Homer at Disney World? Would you see like crossovers where all of a sudden here comes Mickey onto, you know, a Mickey and Bart short? Would you see, you know, that kind of stuff is really fascinating to me. I mean, they already have a Simpsons kind of world at Universal Studios, but, you know, Disney, of course, has no money they can fix it. I just don't know how those deals work.
Well, I think the Simpsons and would be basically what Groening wants to do. I mean, Groening still owns those characters. Groening owns Futurama. Groening, you know, that.
Yeah, I just don't know where the – I don't know where the deals, like, how they exist and who owns what and who is responsible for what and who is
– I think – but, again, I think the biggest effect on the Simpsons, like, right now, like, they are – like on FX all the time. Because they have an extra deal you know, the syndication deals.
They're on FXX, the third FX.
And FXX. And so that would have to be renegotiated if Disney owned it, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways. I don't know enough other things that Fox owns, just right off the top of my head, other than the Marvel movie rights to X-Men and FF, Fantastic Four. So you think those would have to be Marvel's priorities, Disney's priorities associated with Marvel and that. But there's probably other, as you said, IP, intellectual property.
Well, one thing I think would be cool is because for me, like one of the things I think this is only a slight little cool thing. But one of the things when I was too young to go see the original Star Wars in the theater. I did, however, go see Return of the Jedi. And I, of course, saw the prequels when they came out. And one of the things for me that I firmly associated with Star Wars movies is at the beginning, hearing that 20th Century Fox logo and that kind of beat. To me, they kind of went hand in hand. I know Lucasfilm has their own thing now or whatever they put it, but I would just like to see like the 20th Century Fox logo like come up before the Star. To me, it'd be cool if they wound up back at the home where they started or whatever. But that's a minor thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what else, you know, Fox, I just don't know what properties we're talking about. But,
Well, let's move now into our top five. Let's assume that this deal goes through and Disney suddenly has the movie rights to Fantastic Four, to X-Men, and they decide they're going to introduce particularly the X-Men and particularly Wolverine into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, Brian, who would your top five be in this scenario of actors to play Wolverine? And the reason that this is interesting in the first place is because Hugh Jackman himself has said he's not playing Wolverine anymore. Logan was his last run. So just thought it would be interesting to see, well, if they had to recast it, just like they did Spider-Man, who would Disney Marvel recast as Wolverine?
The first thing you do is you call up Hugh Jackman and you give him as much money as it takes. And I think he might be interested because this is such a different and new kind. And I think part of him would feel a little, especially if he knew Robert Downey Jr. was going to be back in Iron Man, they wanted to team up the two. I think a part of him might feel a little obligation to kind of carry that character over into this new kind of, I think he, obviously, he feels a deep connection to the character because he's been the character now for 15 years, 20 years. And it'd be hard to just completely let somebody else just run with it. So the first thing you do is you call Hugh Jackman. So, assuming that he's off the table, we're going to have to come up with five others that could do the role. I think Channing Tatum is a possibility.
All right. So would he be your number five?
Yeah. I'm going to put Channing Tatum at number five. I mean, he's kind of probably too boyishly good looking for the role, but I could see it. Number four, now this is an off-the-wall choice, and I mentioned this to you earlier, and now part of this is because I'm not just thinking of who I want, I'm thinking of who the studio would want and what they're looking for and who would be actually pursuing the role, and I think Zac Efron is a possibility.
Hugh Jackman, please say yes. Or new Channing Tatum, out of Gambit.
One of the things that I think is important with Wolverine is you have to have a really good sense of comedic timing. I think Wolverine has to be funny, right? I mean, he has to have this dry kind of like, and I think Zach has proven himself to be a good, not a guffaw type guy, but a good physical comedian, a good straight man. I think he could do it. Number three, I'm going off book again here, and this is one that I don't think people are going to see, but I think if you've seen some of his recent work, I think it's possible. And this is a guy who, back in the day, was considered for the role of Captain America, but did not get the job. I'm talking about John Krasinski.
Okay, Jim from The Office.
Jim Halpert as
right,
Wolverine.
As Wolverine. Okay. What makes you think he would be able to do that?
Well, hey, I saw his physical transformation for 127 hours. He worked out like crazy, and he put on the muscle mass and the kind of bodybuilding kind of persona that I think it would take to be Wolverine. Because let's face it, if you're going to be Wolverine – in your contract, 30% of the movie, you're going to be shirtless. Okay, we know that. I mean, that's going to be part of the deal that's in the contract. That's part of what – so if you don't have that, it's not going to work, okay? He's got the height. He's got kind of the build and the kind of – I just think he'd be good. I think he could be really good.
I think one of the things that is interesting about these choices is how also unlike Hugh Jackman they are, especially when he started in as Wolverine. So any hesitation I'm voicing is really based on that. Like, I think one of the reasons Jackman succeeded so well, and why I agree with your first move is to ask him to do it, is because he was just kind of an unknown. And so these folks who – other actors you've suggested, these other actors you've suggested – would have to work through a lot more baggage than Jackman did initially. So it'll be interesting to see if your top two have some of those same constraints or possibilities.
Now I'm going to go. This is a one that I think could do it. For number two, I'm going with Tom Hardy
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Okay.
Kinda,
maybe a little tied up with DC and
a big name, but kind of an under the radar kind of guy. Like he never really, he's in a lot of stuff. You know the name, but you don't really. Most people probably couldn't pick him out of a lineup out in public. I mean, he's not really known. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he is known, but he's not known.
I really do like that pick. He now also has a lot of credits to his name and a lot of I don't know that baggage is the right word, but a lot of things. Most movie fans go into these would say, hey, that's Tom Hardy. But I really like that pick. I think because most of the characters he's played kind of have some of that brooding, kind of dark, kind of layer to them, kind of gritty sort of thing. So it's, you know, playing Wolverine would almost be like Tom Hardy being Tom Hardy. And that's the kind of casting that seems to really fit Marvel a whole lot better. Kind of like, oh, of course you pick Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. And, oh, of course you pick Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange. So I really like that as number two. Who do you have as number one?
Number one, I'm really, the more I think about it, I think this is a perfect fit. It's it has so many elements working for it. It's splashy. The guy could handle it. It would generate so much controversy and clicks and just interest. And I think the Dark Knight, Christian Bale, would make a perfect Wolverine.
Nice. So I'm going to guess that in that case, the number one, that's probably your desire overwhelming what you think the studio might actually do.
I don't think Christian Bale's interested. I mean, I don't think he needs or wants to be a part, but I think he would be fantastic.
Yeah, he'd be a really good Wolverine. He'd definitely throw himself into it. He'd probably go live out in the snow for a couple of months.
In some ways, you know, One of the hard things, and one of the most probably difficult things is to be being Batman. Is you sign up for the role, and you do all the work, and you realize that you're kind of like absent from the movie in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying? Like because you're behind this mask, and most of it doesn't really matter what you do. Like we see Batman, you know, and nobody sees you. Like it can. Very few movies really focused on the Bruce Wayne part of the character. You know what I'm saying? Right. I mean, you do it, but Batman's the star. Yeah. And the Batman is really more of it's not something, it's not, you can't really emote behind the mask. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't get to be that. So I think Wolverine would give him a chance to be a superhero and be front and center.
Yeah. I think, it, you know, as I think about that pick, and again, I think about how much I like your number two, I guess my ideal would be you have Tom Hardy as Wolverine, and you have Christian Bale as Sabretooth.
That'd be good.
That way you kind of get Bale interested because suddenly he's the villain. He's the super bad
I'm
guy.
I'm assuming.
Good guy.
In this scenario, I'm assuming Kevin Nash is not available to be Sabretooth.
There you go. That's right. That's right. And all Tom Hardy has to do is kind of his Mad Max character and. You know, Bale gets to own everything else.
Yeah. I mean,
hey, listeners, there you have it. Brian's top five for who would play Wolverine. I tend to agree. You make Hugh Jackman say no first, Marvel, if it comes to that. But tell us what you think, again, on Brian's Twitter at 10K Movies, T-E-N-K Movies, on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Thank you again for coming back and listening, downloading, hopefully sharing this podcast with others. You might be interested in it. We hope that this week for you is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline.